Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, October 1st. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for the Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, an affiliate of Albany Med. Saratoga Hospital, with more than 20 locations across the greater Saratoga region. People you trust, care you deserve. SaratogaHospital.org. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so joining us this afternoon from Medical Monday is Dr. Sunitha Sukumaran of New York Oncology Hematology. She's here to answer your questions about breast cancer. We always get a lot of calls on this program, so get yours in now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Sukumaran and your calls all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hi, everybody. We're back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us on this Medical Monday to discuss breast cancer is Dr. Sunitha Sukumaran of New York Oncology Hematology. She's board-certified medical oncologist and hematologist. After completing her degree at TD Medical College in India, she went on to a residency in Rosalind Franklin University in Chicago, completed a fellowship in oncology and hematology at the Medical College of Wisconsin. She's a member of both the American Society of Clinical Oncology and American Society of Hematology. Dr. Sukumaran, welcome to Medical Monday. We're so delighted that you're here.
Thank you, Alan Shar. I'm glad to be here.
And I want to ask you a question that only would come from me, of course, and that is, can men get, we know that men could get breast cancer, but how prevalent is it?
Men do get breast cancer. The prevalence is around 1 in 1,000. Comparing to the prevalence of breast cancer in women is 1 in 8.
Okay, so let me get that straight. That's really incredible. 1 in every 8 women will contract breast cancer.
Breast cancer.
That's incredible. That's a
right.
lot of people.
That's a lot of people. It's approximately the incidence means the new cases are like 12%. That's a lot. That breast cancer is the most commonly diagnosed malignancy worldwide. And this is the most common cancer-related death in women globally. That is the incidence and prevalence and intensity of the breast cancer.
So more women get breast cancer than men get prostate cancer?
Yes. For prostate cancer is the most common cancer in men. Yes.
Yeah. And as you know, there are certain myths about breast cancer. Let me explore some of them. Here's a myth, which I think is wrong. The larger your breasts, the more likely you are to get breast cancer.
That's not true. But there is one thing. It's not the size of the breast. Denser your breast, you get more breast cancer. That's because you have more glandular tissue than the fatty component of the breast. So the most common type of the breast cancer is invasive ductal carcinoma. The cancer arises from the ductal portion of the breast tissue. So dense tissue means you have more gland and more duct. So you are predisposed to have more breast cancer than women with less dense breast cancer.
So can we draw any inference from this? So in other words, if you were to take a national scan and say, do more women with smaller breasts get breast cancer than those with larger breasts?
I don't think there is such a correlation in the size. No,
yes.
I don't think any studies authoritatively telling that the size of the breast is directly linked to more cancer or less cancer.
Uh-huh. So it's always density.
Density.
And how do you measure your density?
I think the density measurement is the mammogram, the screening test to detect the breast cancer. When they do the testing, they grade the density by A, B, C. C is the highest density. So that's the way. It's a mammogram is a simple X-ray of the breast to look for any abnormality. So the X-rays will usually tell the density.
Should women get mammograms?
Yes, of course. The breast cancer related death has significantly come down since the 1980s and 1990s because of the screening mammogram, which detected the cancer at early stage. With effective treatment, we were able to cure, and more women were able to live with breast cancer, and they had good survival. So they should get, there are clear guidelines for screening mammogram age and guidelines nowadays.
So the incident is badly put, but fewer women are dying of breast cancer now because of early X-rays and mammograms.
Mm-hmm.
But are we also discovering more people who have cancer as a result of doing the mammograms?
That's a good thing, finding more cancer
Of
course, that's a good thing in the sense we are diagnosing them at an early stage where we can do the treatment which can be cured. So that surgery, radiation, and estrogen treatment, chemo, so we can cure them. Rather than if we don't do mammogram, we will find breast cancer by a woman palpating a lump in her breast. By the time, mostly it will be a stage 4 disease.
Oh, interesting.
The breast cancer has spread outside from the breast to the bone, liver, or to the brain. That time it is not curable, and she's terminally ill most of the time.
Because I remember the days when they used to tell women to palpitate their breasts in order to know. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Do we know what causes breast cancer?
Yeah, there are many many etiology or the agents or like reason to have breast cancer, but we cannot exactly pinpoint like one or two or three. There are a group of things. Like one is family history. That's one of the, if you have breast, something in your genes.
Is that top?
I would say yes.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. That's
and two?
Two will be exposure to estrogen and progesterone in the form of oral contraceptive pills or hormone replacement for long time, such as more than 3 to 5 years.
So when somebody comes to see you, doctor, mm-hmm. A woman comes to see you and says, I want the contraception. Do you tell them don't do it?
They can have, the other part of it is the age, the breast cancer, the average age of breast cancer is around in the 60s, mean age. So younger women, it is okay. But oral contraceptive use beyond mid-40s and postmenopausal women taking hormone replacement therapy for longer time, more than 3 to 5 years, they can have for short period of time. So those are the...
So you gave me two. Give me a third. How about smoking?
Smoking isn't a strong correlation so far. What there is alcohol. They have been telling there is a link between alcohol and breast cancer. There's been studies, small group of studies done, which shows that women who drink alcohol more than one drink per day have a high risk of getting breast cancer. It's approximately 15% comparing, 10 to 15% comparing to the women who don't drink at all.
Isn't that interesting? Do we know why that is?
Okay, so the breast cancer has a direct correlation with the female hormone estrogen.
Oh, I see.
So the alcohol tend to cause female hormone level of estrogen. So that directly has a correlation with the breast cancer formation. And also some of the alcohol byproduct, mm-hmm. that also cause some elevation of estrogen levels in the female body. So that is the theory there.
Is there a difference for why men and women get breast cancer?
The frequency or the incidence.
No. I know a lot more women get breast cancer than men. But the question I have is, so the same things that cause breast cancer in women, are those the same things that cause breast cancer in men?
The thing is, we cannot say, okay, probably not the same things, but I would say one thing common in both of them is genetics, the genes. Because sure. Some of the genes like BRCA, BRCA gene, that mutated family members, men can get young prostate cancer and breast cancer.
Interesting. So yes. That there's a relationship between vulnerability between prostate cancer and breast cancer.
Yes.
In
yes.
Men.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back. Let me give you the number, folks, and I promise you we'll take your calls then. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we are back with our wonderful guest, Dr. Sunitha Sukumaran of New York Oncology Hematology, board-certified medical oncologist and hematologist. Okay, gang, we'll take your calls now. We'll go, as often we do, to Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on.
What structures are likely to cause false positives on the mammogram?
Thank you for that wonderful question. The structures which cause false positive mammogram include prior scar tissue. If a woman had a breast biopsy in the past, that can cause a false positive mammogram. And other one is women with dense breast, sometimes because of their density, some of the structures in the mammogram can look like an abnormal finding, which is usually clarified by doing further testing such as ultrasound, and sometimes even we do an MRI, which is also another tool to eliminate the false positive mammograms.
And very often, women do get false positives.
Yes, yes, especially women with younger women,
yeah.
Women with a dense breast, and women with a prior biopsy or scar tissue. That's the reason that we recommend women to have this mammogram usually in the same place.
So you can compare,
yes.
As we used to say in political
exactly.
science.
That also eliminate the false positive readings, yes.
Okay, thank you, Jim. All right, now we'll go to Charles in Lenox, Massachusetts, my stomping grounds. Hiya, Charles.
Hello, Alan. Yes, I, as a retired primary care physician, I used to get a lot of questions from women who had the report of dense breast on their mammogram, and they weren't sure what to do further in terms of diagnostically, and frankly, I wasn't always sure. Assuming no other risk factors for breast cancer, a woman of otherwise average risk, what, if any, other studies should a woman who receives such a report of dense breasts have, consider doing?
Well, that's a great question. Thank you. One of the additional tests we can do is do an ultrasound. This is the first time a report coming as a dense breast, to make sure it's a thorough exam has been done. Then the other new form of mammogram, like 3D form, like tomosynthesis, the three-dimensional picture of the mammogram will be a good option for women with dense breast, comparing to the 2D picture with the 3D picture, which gives a better delineation of the density, and we will be able to find any small abnormalities and go on from there.
Now, Charles, if I could just ask a question on top of yours. Doctor, if women have, you know, things that they put in their breasts to make their breasts look larger or even go the other way, implants or even go the other way, is that more likely to cause breast cancer? Do we see any incidents?
It is not any direct and high incidence of breast cancer by having breast implants, not really. But there were some implants with the poor quality, they can rupture, and there were incidents of very, very low incident. I'm underlying very, very low incidence of some form of another cancer called lymphoma.
Uh-huh.
So that's very low. So I want to all the listeners not to panicky on this information. It's very, very low incidence of a lymphoma called anaplastic lymphoma. It's not common at all. No worries.
Gotcha. Charles, you want to come back with anything else?
No, that was very helpful. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Charles, for calling. Appreciate that very much. Sure. Okay, it's 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So here's the way it is, folks. Anne in New Paltz is next up. After her, no one. So if you dial that, 1-800-348-2551, you're next in. See, that's my word to you, but you got to do it faster than anybody else. Okay, so now let's go to Anne in New Paltz, as we always say. Anne in New Paltz, you're on.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
How are you? I'd like to know if it's safe for a woman in her 70s to take hormone replacement therapy vaginally, a cream.
Hello. Yeah, it's a good question.
And could you repeat it? Because the line isn't quite clear. So a woman in her 70s, could she be taking hormone replacement? How?
Vaginally.
Hormone replacement vaginally with a cream.
Right. Okay.
Rather than orally or with a patch.
That's a good question. Thanks for that question. Well, if you don't have any active breast cancer or you don't have any history of breast cancer, it's okay. It's not a high risk. However, if you have active breast malignancy or a cancer or history of personal history of cancer, even though the local absorption of the estrogen cream is low, but some women there can be more absorbed than others, so we don't recommend. If you don't have any other risk factors, it is okay.
Okay?
Okay. Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it, Anne. Okay, so now we're going to go to line number two. Thank you, Joe. Brian in Albany, you're on.
Yes, I have a question. My daughter has dense breasts, and her gynecologist, OB, recommended yearly MRIs with contrast. I have no problem with the yearly MRI, but repeated contrast year after year, decade after decade, are there issues with that? It's gadolinium, I believe.
Thank you. That's a great question. So we don't know that exact answer to that question. It's still unclear. The reason is, yes, gadolinium IV contrast every year, it is a chemical put into the body, it may. The studies have been going on, and there have been some small studies telling that there could be some changes in the blood vessels of the central nervous system, and there could be some toxic effect. But to say something definitely, we don't have the clinical data. People has been observed as of now. Anything in medicine, we weigh the risk versus the benefit. So if she's young, she has strong family history of breast cancer with any genetic mutations such as BRCA1 and 2 and some other mutations, it will be a reasonable option to get MRI.
So how about with the contrast?
With the contrast makes the study a better study.
It does.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. The risk factors. We have to do the risk versus benefit.
Of course.
If not having any other high risk, maybe she can do once in 2 years, or depends on her other risk factors.
And Brian, what's the risk there?
Her mother was diagnosed with breast cancer at a very early age.
Yeah.
However, my daughter was tested for the BRCA gene, and she was negative.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, but even though this is the guideline now, we start the screening mammogram or MRI 10 years before the age of diagnosis of the youngest cancer in the family.
Mm.
Or it has to be, they should be at least 30 or 25 to 30. So if her mother had breast cancer, say, somebody had, I'm not telling this one,
of course
somebody
not.
Had 29. So still we don't recommend at 19, at least we want to wait them until 29, 30. So even though they don't have a BRCA mutation, very little known to us. There are a lot unknown to us. There are some genes still we don't know. So we go by the family history and do the screening.
Okay, thank you for that. We'll go to line number four, to Susan in Amherst. Did I ever tell you I love Amherst? Okay, Susan, you're on.
Hello. So my question is, I've heard recently about thermograms instead of mammograms, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about those and whether there's data out about the effectiveness of having a thermogram instead of a mammogram.
And you can tell us what a thermogram is, doctor, while you're at it.
It is a little more sensitive type of the mammogram,
uh-huh.
which has more sensitivity, which means which can pick up things better than in a regular mammogram.
When I hear therma, I think heat.
Yeah, it's a technique using some energy to make it better reading.
Okay. So when do you say to a patient, get a thermogram, not a mammogram?
You know, as of now, the guideline, there is no standard guideline telling that anybody should get thermogram.
I see.
So, but there are small clinical studies telling that it has better finding things, better, that means better sensitivity, but the coverage from the insurance, and it has not been the standard guideline. Probably women with a dense breast or with a strong family history, they can use it, but it depends. It's not become a standard of practice as of now.
Gotcha. Thanks. Great question. Okay, let's go to line number five, Stephanie in Clifton Park. Stephanie in Clifton Park, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. It's a great show, great information. My question is, when is it time to stop taking mammograms? I take them every year. I'm 65. My mother is 91. So that's her question.
Well, that's a great question. So U.S. Preventive Task Force recommend stopping the mammogram around the age of 75. So we have to be very clear. There are different societies, like American ASCO, American Society of Clinical Oncology. So they recommend stopping the mammogram as long as the patient has unable to do it, or her health status is not good, and her life expectancy is less than 5 to 10 years.
So 95, a little old.
94, I wouldn't say. If she does, it's okay.
She's 91.
I would say after 75 in general, if you are not in a good health, you don't have to go through that.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Very good question. All right. And now we're going to go to line number six, where Judy has been patiently waiting. Judy, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is in regards to estrogen replacement hormonal therapy. I have two friends who had hysterectomies in their 30s, and so have been on that for many years. Are they at greater risk for breast cancer or any other kind of cancer because they have had to take that
great question.
Hormone replacement therapy?
Thank you. It's a great question. So how old are they, and are they still taking the hormone replacement?
Well, actually, one of them is my sister, and she is 59, and yes, she is. The other one is in her 60s, and I believe she is not taking it anymore.
Okay, and if she's already in the menopausal age, and continuing to take more than 5 years of age, there is a slightly increased risk of developing breast cancer. Remember, at one point, all the women of postmenopausal age were given hormone replacement therapy to combat the postmenopausal symptoms, increasing the bone density and so on. Then the big study, population study, came that women who were taking postmenopausal hormone replacement had increased incidence of breast cancer. So that became no more a standard of care. Around 15, 20 years, that was a standard of care of prescribing hormone replacement every woman. So I would say at age 59, probably she can discontinue her hormone replacement.
So let me ask you a dumb man question, okay? Me. Why? So in other words, this hormone replacement almost always comes during or after menopause to stop the symptoms, right? Is that what happens?
Yes.
Okay, so if you don't use it to stop the symptoms, is there something else you can do?
You know, the current guideline is you can use it for some short period of time, not like more than 3 or 5 years. You can take for short period of time, say 6 months or 1 year, to get through that symptoms.
Yes.
And there are other alternatives for hot flashes, certain antidepressants and certain medicine, but that they are not as palatable to the population.
Yeah.
So short period of time to get through the symptoms, it's okay.
Judy, you got your answer?
I do have my answer. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
You're
Judy.
Welcome.
Bye. All right. And now we're going to go to Vicki in Albany. Vicki in Albany, you're on.
Thank you. And I'd like to ask, does diet affect the possibility of breast cancer? And in some, do some countries have more or less of this?
My kind of question. Great. Great, Vicki.
Well, That's a great question. Thank you. The increased body mass index, or being obese or overweight, has association with the certain cancers like breast cancer and uterine cancer, especially endometrial cancer. So
wait a second. So you're saying the heavier you are, the more likely it is you'll get breast cancer.
And some form of uterine cancer, yes.
Oh,
there
and
is
uterine
a link.
Cancer. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
But it's not a, like...
But I'm asking about a particular diet.
No,
I mean, you can eat a lot of sweets. You can eat a lot of meat. What type of diet?
So, you know, there is no particular diet as per se you shouldn't eat. Only thing they say is, like in any other form of prevention of cancer, like eat more veggies and fruits.
Sure.
And... low-calorie diet, keep ideal body weight. There is no particular one food we say don't eat or don't take more. I get a lot of questions on taking soy products all the time. So there have been studies done and people looked into the soy-based products. So women in Asia, soybean-based product is part of their regular diet. But historically, their cancer rate is less than women who don't take soy. So for that reason, we never say... If you are taking soy-based product, don't take it. We don't say that. But if you are not taking, don't take soy after the breast cancer. So
okay, but Vicki's question is excellent, because what she's saying is if you compare various countries around the world, which of those countries has the lowest and which has the highest? Do you know offhand?
In general, the highest number of breast cancer is in the Western world.
Western world, of course.
So if you say what is that in their diet... More food with more high calories, red meat, more alcohol, right? And their body mass index is higher than the other part of the world. So in general, Western world, US, UK, Europe, they have the higher incidence of
junk food, that kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah. The high calorie food or zero calorie food.
So you mentioned red meat. Is red meat bad?
Red meat has association with many cancers. I don't see any direct correlation with breast cancer, but red meat and colon cancer, gastrointestinal malignancies, high incidence.
There was a study a while ago about women who came from, I think, Japan, and their diet was low in meat, And when they came and they had
cancer.
And then when they came here and put on our Western diet, it increased.
I remember that
the same as the Western. So I think what you're saying is the same thing.
Right. So for that reason, I cannot say one particular date, like, say, eating a mac and cheese, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't do it. Thank you, Vicki. Appreciate it. All right. Now we're going to go. No, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back to Melissa, Rebecca, Lindsay, Priscilla, and Anna, and anybody else who calls. And we are back on Medical Monday, the Vox Pop. I'm Alan Chartok, and with us today is Dr. Sunitha Sukumaran of New York Oncology Hematology, a member of both the American Society of Clinical Oncology and the American Society of Hematology. Dr. Sukumaran, we're getting a lot of telephone calls, and we have a lot of people lined up, and we hope that we can take just enough time with each, not too, like the three bears, not too much, not too little. Okay, we're going to go now to, Anna in Latham. Okay, Anna, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I had a biopsy in June, and it's given me a big lump, someone would text half of my breast, and it's almost now resolved. If I hear you correctly, then mammogram screening is out for me in the future because of this biopsy.
How old are you, if you don't mind?
Sorry?
How old are you?
I am 51.
51, okay. It is not... you still get screening mammogram, yes. And you compare your mammogram to the prior mammogram, and so they know where the biopsy was done, and they compare. So the mammogram techniques still work for you, and it's a good screening mammogram, unless you have a dense breast. If you have dense breast, I would augment, or I would recommend a ultrasound along with a mammogram to get a better and clear picture.
And so for the women who have, fiber, what are those called? You have fibrous...
Fibroids.
Those can be difficult because you don't really know, right?
Yeah, the fibroids are benign, means they are harmless.
Yes.
Harmless.
But how do you know that they're not cancer? That they're
okay,
fibroids?
when you feel it palpated,
yes.
That's one feel. But any lump in the breast, irrespective of the age, we biopsy it nowadays.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so that's the way to...
Anna, are we done with you, or do you want something else?
One quick other question is, from the biopsy, they told me that I have LICS, lobular carcinoma in situ.
Mm-hmm.
Which is it's not that it's not cancerous, but it's a too high a risk marker.
Right.
And what is the recommended screening then for those?
Yeah, you know, the screening is, as always, you should get a clinical exam 6 to 12 months, once in 6 months, clinical exam, 6 to 12 month clinical exam, and a screening mammogram annually with a ultrasound if you have dense breast.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you,
okay,
Anna.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. We're going to go now to Melissa from Kingston. Melissa.
Hey, Alan. Hi, doctor. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a 40-year-old triple negative BRCA1 breast cancer survivor. I'm 40, and I see my oncologist every 6 months. But I feel a little confused about the best practices for screening for other types of cancers, and I'm wondering if you could speak about that. And also, I have an 8-year-old son, so as he ages, what should I be doing as far as screening for him as he gets older? I'm not sure if he has this same genetic trait.
For your son, we don't usually recommend anything until they become adults. And we let them have their childhood and teenage years. And probably having a pediatrician seeing them, their annual visits, and going from there until they get into adulthood around 25 or so, then he should undergo the testing, BRCA testing. And then
right.
annual physical exam and having a under the surveillance of a physician or a family practice doctor should be a good practice. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. And now on to Rebecca in New Windsor, New York. Rebecca, your turn.
Hello?
Hello, Rebecca. Your turn.
Thank you so much for having this program. Very similar to Melissa, I'm also a breast cancer survivor, 42 years old. I was diagnosed with DCIS 1 year ago. DCIS stage zero breast cancer, and though I had three surgeons recommend I get a mastectomy, I ended up getting a double mastectomy. I had deep flap surgery, which is a double mastectomy with reconstruction using my own tissue, and in January. But the two biggest questions that have been asked of me, and I thought that maybe it should be discussed, is you did mention about early detection and self-examination and something being palpable. I've been asked a lot, did I feel a lump? And, you know, with early detection DCIS, you don't feel a lump, because even though my DCIS was very widespread, I had more than 2 inches because of early detection. There was no lump.
Okay, Rebecca, let me cut you off and say some of this we've talked about on the program already today, which is that if you do the mammogram, obviously, you're going to find things right before you find self-examination. So we did establish that. And doctor, do you have any answers to?
Yeah, I know. My question is, you don't have breast tissue because you have double mastectomy, right?
Right. No longer. Right.
Right.
Not anymore.
So you don't have any breast tissue. Mm-hmm. So the mammogram doesn't work for you.
Right. It was my first. They detected it in my first mammogram.
Right.
Correct.
Right. So mammogram doesn't work for you because you have no breast tissue. So nobody will do a mammogram.
Yes, but I think the question, doctor, was maybe I'm misinterpreting this. Is because she has gone through this. Her question about mammograms is relevant to those people who haven't. Do you know
right, and I kept saying, did you feel a lump? No, I didn't feel a lump, but it was pretty widespread DCIS at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't feel a lump. And the other thing was about the BRCA gene. People said, well, are you, you know, do you have the gene? Do you have the BRCA gene? Are you genetically predisposed? 95% hormone receptive, and I'm BRCA negative. So,
okay.
I take hormone replacement now, but I don't think that was talked about yet.
Okay, all good warnings for everybody. Thank you. Okay, now we're going to go to Priscilla in Pine Plains. Priscilla in Pine Plains, you're on.
Hello, good afternoon, and thanks. I'm calling because my daughter is 33, and on both sides of our family, we have women who have had breast cancer. On my side, my own sister had two forms of breast cancer, which she got in her mid-60s. She did decide on a double mastectomy. She is now going to turn 80. She's wonderful. On my husband's side, his sister passed away in her 50s, or she got breast cancer in her 50s and passed away in her late 50s, early 60s. I'm not certain. I don't know what kind she had. And I know that her sister, my other sister-in-law, did test for the BRCA gene and did not have it. So my daughter, on both of her aunt's sides, has had a history of breast cancer. She's 33. When is a good time for her to have her first mammogram?
Great question. We ideally recommend mammograms starting at the age of 35, a baseline mammogram. And based on the family history, she can continue to have annual mammogram. Otherwise, a baseline at 35, and she can wait until 40 to receive annual mammogram. Then there is another guideline or recommendation is 10 years from the youngest age of breast cancer diagnosis in the family. So do you know who got the...
My sister was, I believe, 64, and my sister-in-law, I think, was mid or late 50s.
Okay, so your daughter can get a baseline mammogram at 35, and then she can wait until 40 to start her annual mammogram from there onwards.
Well, but don't younger women sometimes, outside the statistical probability, get breast cancer?
Yes, they do. The youngest breast cancer I have seen is 26. I have currently two patients. They are in their 28 and 29. They do.
Yeah.
They do. But still, we don't recommend mammogram at a younger age based on the studies that even the starting age of mammogram at 40 is now controversial. Some places, they only say start mammogram from 45 and go onwards. At age 40, they think there is a chance of overdiagnosis and overtreatment. But still, women and oncology group thinks that early detection and the risk versus benefit of overdiagnosis versus diagnosing at an early age and trying to cure is a better option.
So is there any reason? Is there any negative associated with going younger?
Yes, sometimes they have younger women have dense breasts, so you will have false positive.
No, I get it. But on the other hand, wouldn't it be smart if you forget about the statistical norm?
I know.
Forget about wouldn't it be better if you have a good reason to have it earlier?
It is always better. As an oncologist, I would say it's always better to get diagnosed early, start the curing mode, or we are able to cure more breast cancer by detecting it early. But as a statistical analysis and a community medicine or social medicine standpoint, they think 40 age of screening is little early and result in more overdiagnosis and false positive and overtreatment. Yeah.
Okay, so the big danger is overtreatment. So in other words, somebody, you think you see it, you really don't, and then you operate, and that's a danger.
Yeah, because you see some false positive, and they undergo the stress of going through that biopsy, then it turned out to be nothing, or maybe a small, low-grade LCIS, like lobular carcinoma in situ or ductal carcinoma in situ, which could be left alone in certain condition if it's very small, very low-grade, etc. Those are the...
Now, you don't do surgery, do you?
I don't do. I am a medical oncologist.
Right. You're a medical oncologist, so you have to talk to the surgeon about your patient, right?
Exactly.
And
yes.
Is there ever any complication in that?
No. Usually, in general, we all work as a team for the patients.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you see something and you say, I think this needs an operation, and the surgeon says no, or the opposite of that, does that ever happen?
You know, I work with the great surgeons. Yeah. And Albany has the great surgical oncologist and breast oncologist. I hardly had such a conflict of interest in the treatment plan.
Okay. Priscilla, thank you for that great call. Appreciate it. Okay. The telephone number here is 1-800-348-2551. We could probably get one or two more in. That's up to you, 1-800-348-2551. And let's go to Sitar in Niskayuna. Okay, Sitar.
Good afternoon, Dr. Kumar. How are you? I have a question. Actually, my question changed different way. I'm a father of triplets. My wife has ovarian cancer. And first question that I have for you is, what's the chances of beating ovarian cancer? Second question do I have is, the lady asks you, what's the chances of me testing my children for cancer?
The first question. So your wife is diagnosed with ovarian cancer. So what stage she's in and what treatment she's getting in, that's a determinant of beating the ovarian cancer. Usually ovarian cancers are diagnosed at a later stage because they don't present with any symptom, means they will be silent. So when the time they diagnose, it will be stage 2 or 3, advanced 3, means spread outside the ovaries. So we try to cure it with
it. It didn't spread up outside ovaries, right in ovaries.
Right in the ovaries, early stage, stage 1. I'm not a gynec oncologist, but it's outside my field. I would say early stage confined to ovary has a better chance of curing than which is spread outside the ovaries.
But Paul's question is a good one. It's a tough disease.
It's a tough disease. It's very silent. Usually when they present with it, it will be spread outside the ovaries and spread to the covering of the intestine and outside other adjacent organs.
So how old are the children, Paul?
11. Sitar.
Okay.
Oh, Sitar. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
One thing I would say is if anybody with ovarian cancer, we recommend doing the BRCA gene 1 and 2. That's one of the indication to do the BRCA 1 and 2 genes. And if your wife has it, the kids will inherit those genes 50% and screen them. But there is
Actually, they did that. They already did that, the children. They said at the time when she got it in 2013, they said there is no affiliation with my wife or ovarian cancer to the children.
Okay. So, Sitar, thank you for calling. We have one more minute. I think we could take another call. And let's go to Paul in Poughkeepsie. Paul, it's got to be fast. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, thank you for taking my call. Very quick question, I guess. Wondering if the doctor has any comments on latent secondary effects and specifically cancers that would come to patients who have been cured of leukemia.
This is my outside of my field, but I think they are at a slightly increased risk of developing skin cancers, so they should be closely followed by dermatology, the skin doctor, and also age-appropriate cancers like doing screening colonoscopy, and they are at slightly increased risk of developing other cancers, especially the one from skin-related cancers.
Okay, thanks for that. Let's see here. We could make it a real fast one if Jennifer from Connecticut. Okay, Jennifer from Connecticut has got to be really fast. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. My mom has a double mastectomy at 65, and I was, I don't have the gene, but I did go and get a biopsy done for some abnormalities because I have extremely dense breast tissues, and I've had two MRIs with contrast from two different screeners. My question is, can they go from one screener to the other and see the difference? And then secondly, I think he's ordering an ultrasound. Is that a normal follow-up to these MRIs with contrast?
Okay, that's got to be the question. Now let's get the answer.
Yes, ultrasound is one of the standard tests we do. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you for that. We are out of time. My apologies to the people who got left on the line, like Chris in Springfield and somebody on line number one who I don't know about yet. I want to thank Dr. Sunitha Sukumaran of New York Oncology Hematology for being here with us today. Support for the Medical Monday comes from WMC Heart and Vascular Institute with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks to our wonderful engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowicz for answering our phones. Our producer's Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Now, stay tuned now for a news update.